We're known for our trees in our part of the world. When you say Oregon to people in other parts of the country, they often picture a landscape covered with trees and rain. We have to explain that much of our part of Oregon is not so rainy, but the trees are here. On both sides of the state line, the celebration known as Arbor Day is actually Arbor Week to give extra time to appreciate what we have. California's Arbor Week is in early March. Arbor Week is this week in Oregon. Here's our chance to talk about trees, big and small, evergreen and deciduous, you name it. Trees are the topic for the hour on the Jefferson Exchange. Two guests with us. Anthony Marek is with the Arbor Day Foundation, where he's the Director of Communications. Thank you, Anthony, for joining us.
Glad to be here, Jeffrey. Thank you.
And Cynthia Orlando joins us as well. She's with the Oregon Department of Forestry. Cynthia, thank you for joining us.
Good morning.
Good to have you both here. Anthony, let's start with you. Give us a little hint about, first of all, why we refer to the day we celebrate trees as Arbor Day and what the Arbor Day Foundation is all about.
Well, Arbor Day was founded in 1872 in Nebraska City, Nebraska. J. Sterling Morton was a distinguished gentleman who moved from Illinois to Nebraska, and that's, of course, plains and prairie, and he missed his trees, and so he encouraged folks to plant trees, and he held an Arbor Day celebration in 1872. Reports show that 1 million trees were planted in Nebraska on the first Arbor Day. And then in 1972, the centennial of Arbor Day, the Arbor Day Foundation was founded. And so we have the mission to inspire people to plant, nurture, and celebrate trees.
Now, Cynthia Orlando at the Oregon Department of Forestry, a lot of people are aware of the Oregon Department of Forestry's work with assisting landowners who are trying to do some logging upon their lands, but also in firefighting efforts that most of us know you for through the summer months, through the dry season, which, of course, seems like a longer dry season this year. But talk a little bit, if you would, about some of the other functions of the Oregon Department of Forestry, particularly as concerns your department.
Well, I work with the Urban and Community Forestry Program, and we work to assist the cities throughout the state with various things like qualifying to become Tree City USA. And we also assist with tree issues like sidewalk conflicts, tree species, suggestions for good street trees. We also respond to occasional inquiries about pruning, those sorts of things.
All right. Now, Tree City USA, that actually comes from you folks at the Arbor Day Foundation, doesn't it, Anthony?
Yes. Thank you. Tree City USA was our flagship, our initial program founded in 1976. Of the 35,000-some municipalities in the United States of America, 3,400 of those are Tree City USA communities. There are certain qualifications. One of the primary ones is a certain number of dollars per capita allocated to the community tree canopy, a tree border commission to oversee that work, and an Arbor Day celebration and proclamation.
When a city becomes a Tree City USA, and several have in our region, how long do they get to hold on to the title? Are they recertified at some point? What sorts of qualifications are necessary to get that designation in the first place?
Yes, it's an annual recertification. They resubmit, and Cynthia might have some items to add here because it goes through the state foresters' offices, some of that application and some of that process also. So, yes, they need to continue to go ahead, Cynthia.
Oh, I was just going to say, right now we have 54 cities in Oregon that are recognized as tree cities, and there's four qualifications they need to meet in order to become Tree City USA. They need to have a community tree board, or tree committee, and a tree ordinance that outlines what species there are recommended, information about hazard trees, avoiding problems with hazardous trees. Those are the typical things that tree ordinances cover. They also need to spend $2 per capita, which is a requirement most cities easily meet just by the money that they spend removing hazard trees. Sometimes a city thinks they won't qualify because they don't think they spend that much on their tree program, but they almost always will meet that one. And then the fourth criteria is kind of the most fun. It's hosting an Arbor Day event, which often includes the mayor's proclamation or a tree planting event with school children. So those are the four qualifications they have to meet to become a tree city. And we have a lot of fun with our events here every year.
No doubt. The $2 per capita, you say most cities are at least of a certain size are already spending that much?
Yes, most cities will meet that.
And it has to be
spent... We have a very small...
Go ahead. You have a very small what?
We have a very small city here, actually, called Echo, which is a Tree City USA. I'm not sure the population, but it's quite tiny.
All right, Echo, Oregon. Yeah, I'm familiar with the name anyway, because it's such a unique name. We'll talk more about trees and tree cities and Arbor Day and Arbor Week with Anthony Merrick at the Arbor Day Foundation and Cynthia Orlando at the Oregon Department of Forestry. Back to talk more about trees. We'll take your phone calls and emails as well when we return to the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 30. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio's News and Information Service. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our topic today is trees. This is Arbor Week in Oregon. Both Oregon and California observe Arbor Week rather than Arbor Day. In California, it comes in early March to coincide with Luther Burbank's birthday, I believe. I'll check that in just a moment. But it's this week in Oregon, Arbor Week, and we're talking about trees and Arbor Week observances with Anthony Merrick at the Arbor Day Foundation and Cynthia Orlando at the Oregon Department of Forestry in the Urban Forestry Program. You can join us on the exchange. One phone number available to you today, 800-838-3760, 800-838-3760, and our email address as well, jx@jeffnet.org. Everything you always wanted to know about trees but were afraid to ask, here's your chance to ask. Let's talk about, Cynthia, you were talking about the $2 per capita that Tree Cities USA have to spend on what specifically?
On anything related to their tree program. So this is the amount of money that they spend on maintaining their trees and, you know, that comes out of the city's funding.
All right, so if you have a city of 5,000, you need to spend $10,000 on your tree program, whether it's planting trees or removing hazard trees, anything like that, really.
Yes.
Okay. So let's talk about... go ahead.
I think the importance of the program is that prior to Tree City USA, tree management across the United States was haphazard at best. And so, as all of the listeners know, if you... failed the plan, you plan to fail. If you don't have a budget, it's hard to stay within a budget if you don't have one. And so there's a discipline for those communities that are involved in the Tree City USA program in that they have a plan and that trees are at the table. When we talk about infrastructure, we often talk about our bridges and our roads. And during Pledge Week, you talk about keeping the lights on and you turn on the faucet and the water comes. People tend to overlook trees, yet trees are part of that infrastructure, and trees are the only part of the infrastructure that actually returns value over time. So a dollar invested in a tree returns between $2 and $5 back to the community, depending on the study. There was a study in Portland, for example, that a street tree in Portland, Oregon, increased the sales price of a home more than $7,000.
So, I was going to ask you what the economic mechanisms were. That's one of them. What are some of the other ways in which we gain value from trees that can be measured in dollars?
Well, one that's really getting traction now is stormwater runoff. The EPA is cracking down heavily on municipalities that have combined sewer systems. So a lot of the early cities were built such that your sanitary sewers and your stormwater runoff sewers during a major storm, they combine and you have a sanitary sewer overflow. So, for example, I was in Pittsburgh for a conference a few months ago, and they were showing us along the rivers where if you were to have a storm, you would have raw sewage pouring out into the river. Obviously, not a good thing. Many municipalities are discovering that if you effectively and properly plant trees throughout the municipality, those trees in that root system act as sponges. So during a storm, during a major downpour, that's being absorbed into the groundwater and into the trees, and you're not having this major runoff that's inundating your storm sewer. So that's one example where cities can save tens of millions of dollars by having a comprehensive tree plan, and then they can avoid the down-the-road cost for sewage treatment plants.
It sounds like at the Arbor Day Foundation, you provide just sort of a general sense of what good tree management guidelines are for cities, and then each state can sort of decide, as Cynthia's department does in Oregon, about how specifically to work that. Is that a fair statement? And so if that is the case, what sorts of tree management guidelines are sitting there generally from the Arbor Day Foundation?
Yes, thank you, Jeffrey. That's an excellent point in that, as I mentioned, there are some 3,400 Tree City USA communities, and you can have neighboring communities dealing with the same challenge. Say that there was storm damage, a storm rolled through, or there was a pest, an invasive pest that's causing damage to the community trees. Each municipality is going to have a unique stance on that, and each is going to have a unique challenge, and we have to trust the local leaders to do best by their community. We emphasize some of the basics, such as proper planting, the right tree in the right place, proper pruning. If you get some of the basics right up front, your long-term benefits are far-reaching.
Cynthia Orlando, then, imagine the Tree City USA guidelines are sitting right there from the Arbor Day Foundation, but is there a level of specificity that the Oregon Department of Forestry adds to that? And then does each municipality then add some more specifics as well?
Yeah, it's sort of, we try to be very consistent, and my coworkers, Kristen Ramstedt, is the primary person actually who looks over the applications. But each city has to meet those qualifications, and we also work with cities to understand the importance of, in some cases, a city might not have the budget to have, for example, a certified arborist. So somebody in their public works program or somebody who maintains their parks program might call us and have questions. They might even perhaps not even understand the importance of not topping a tree or not understand the importance of proper pruning. And so we work with these individuals to make sure not only that they meet the qualifications for Tree City USA, but also that they have long-term goals for their program to manage the trees in a way that will have long-term benefits so that they don't have to keep removing trees that don't work out and replacing those.
Anthony Merrick, was there a lot of trial and error, and mostly error, I suppose, in the early years of trying to put trees in urban environments? I mean, generally, urbanization tends to move a lot of trees out, and then people go, whoops, we kind of like that tree. I remember hearing in junior high about places where you couldn't plant poplar trees, for example, because they could break sewer lines and subway tunnels. So were there a lot of mistakes made in trying to put trees in urban environments over the years?
Yes, I think like anything else, there is trial and error, and folks will know from walking around their communities that sometimes you'll see trees under power lines, and so that's an example of right tree in the right place. In rare occasions, the tree was there before the power line. In most occasions, the power line was there, and then folks bought a house and they planted a street tree, and that tree was not the appropriate tree to be planted there. I live in the San Francisco Bay Area, and when I walk my neighborhood, there were all this was olive orchards, this was walnut orchards, this was almond orchards, and you'll still see remnant trees. And I was talking to a neighbor yesterday, and she said, "Well, the walnut tree had to come out because it was getting too close to the sewer." So sometimes you see situations where folks plant a tree, and then when that tree grows to be 40 and 50 feet, there. During a storm, they're very intimidated by that tree. So it's like anything else where it's a deliberate decision. Go ahead and plan. Go on arborday.org. Get the right tree in the right place. So if you want a nice 12-foot tree, you'll see what a 12-foot tree is. If you want a nice fruit tree, you'll see what fruit trees grow best in your climate.
So, Cynthia Orlando, when people are looking for things like that for Oregon, does the Department of Forestry provide a fairly specific list of what grows best in certain parts of the state?
Yes, we do. For example, in southern Oregon, the temperatures are much hotter there in the summer. And we also sometimes submit news articles to various publications that help local homeowners to understand what types of trees they can plant that might withstand, for example, a little bit of drought. You know, it's just important for people to remember that when they first put a new tree into the ground, which this being spring is a good time for planting as well as fall, it's important to remember that tree is going to need regular deep watering for the first 3 years of its life, no matter what the species. And so we generally try to work with people to remember to think about long-term tree care before they perhaps randomly select a tree that might not work out for the long term for their property.
This is the Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We are talking about trees, tree care, tree planting, tree management, you name it. It is Arbor Week in the state of Oregon. We're talking to Anthony Marek at the Arbor Day Foundation and Cynthia Orlando, who's with the Oregon Department of Forestry. Our phone number for the discussion, 800-838-3760, 800-838-3760. Our email address, jx@jeffnet.org. If you're getting a little confused by phone numbers, let me straighten things out. We also do have some pledge phone numbers to give, and let me turn that over to Charlotte Duren for just a moment here so we can talk about Spring Fund Drive 2014.
Yes, it is our Spring 2014 Fund Drive, and this is a great chance right now during the Jefferson Exchange for you to call in and make that pledge of support. If this is a show that you rely on and enjoy listening to every day, the number to call is 888-552-6191. That's 888-552-6191. Or you can pledge online at ijpr.org.
We are just over $19,000 in the pledge drive thus far, and with about 200 people calling in pledges thus far, we're reaching for 500 new members over this fund drive through next Tuesday. We're just hoping that you'll be one of those new members. If you haven't supported JPR yet, this is a great time. Spring has sprung, the grass has grizz. We wonder where the pledges is. So call those pledges into 888-552-6191 or pledge online at ijpr.org. So now back to our program here, talking to Anthony Marek and Cynthia Orlando about trees. Cynthia, we're just talking about planting times, and spring is a good time to plant trees, yes?
Yes, it is.
Any particular trees that are better planted in spring than in fall?
No, but basically we remind people to, we like to work with people on remembering the tree planting tips. A common mistake people make is they will plant the tree a little too deeply. So we recommend that they dig the hole at least 2 feet wider than the size of the root system or the root ball. And also, sometimes people don't actually even understand to remove the wire basket that comes with the tree. So remember to remove that and take off any burlap. And then make sure the roots are covered with soil using soil from around the hole, and not to plant the tree too deeply, and allow it to settle, and that will increase the drainage. And then also, you don't really need to fertilize a newly planted tree, but deeply watering will help get rid of air pockets. And then also, we always remind people to mulch around the tree. Don't push the mulch up to the base of the tree, but leave a little space around it, and add a depth of about 4 to 6 inches around the base of your tree is fine.
And how is the deep watering accomplished? You say for 3 years, the first 3 years of the tree's planting, it needs to get that deep watering. What's the process then?
Yes, well, we recommend sometimes to even take a bucket and put holes in the bottom of it, fill that up, and move that around the base of the tree, around the perimeter of the crown. Or you can also just put a soaker hose out there and let it deeply soak at least once a week, especially during the hot spells of summer, especially when it gets up into the 90s.
All right, you were talking about the differences in trees that you plant at different parts of the state, particularly in southern Oregon, south of Roseburg, I'm sure, where it gets a whole lot hotter than many other parts of the state. There are days when Medford actually is hotter than Gila Bend, Arizona in the summertime, we've noticed. How long a list is it? I mean, how many different types of trees are on the list of things that are recommended for planting in different parts of the state of Oregon?
Well, there's dozens, and if somebody wanted to contact us, they could contact us through our website, Oregon Department of Forestry's website, on the Urban Forestry webpage, or just call our main office number. call in now if they had questions about tree care.
Sure. Are the tree species listed on the website, or is it something you have to go through the website?
No, they're not listed on there because usually there's so many different specifics that come in. So we usually have like a matrix that will say, well, here's a good tree that works well under a power line. Here's a good tree if you're looking for something that's flowering. Here's something if you're looking for fall color. So people have so many different preferences, it's easier to just take inquiries as they come and, customize and work with that person for what they're looking for.
All right. It really does take some careful figuring out of the circumstances and distance from building, proximity of sidewalk, I'm sure,
yeah.
Vehicular traffic, power lines you mentioned.
Yes, very good. And we try to somewhat encourage, if it's possible, we try to encourage people to plant native trees, but they need to understand, for example, an Oregon white oak takes a lot of room. It's not something you could put into a small or even a medium yard. It should be a very large yard. And so we try to work with people, too, on native trees and encouraging native landscaping also with native plants because they are better for the pollinators and fairly low maintenance.
That's a good point right there, though, because you mentioned the Oregon white oak. But, I mean, it seems like there are, I think I can think of at least four different oak species that are present in southern Oregon.
Yes, and if somebody had a question about tree species and so on, I would recommend them contacting us through the website and look us up on the Urban Forestry webpage. You'll see Kristen Ramstead and Cynthia Orlando, and then Katie Mampa. She works over in our Eastern Oregon, the other side of the Cascades, with homeowners over there.
All right. A couple of questions then, just generally about ways in which neighborhoods can approach trees. I know that there are quite a few neighborhoods that seem to be going through the leafy tree canopy die-off situation where it seems like a lot of pretty trees were planted at about the same time, and they have this great canopy that overhangs the street, and then because the trees are the same species, same general age, they all die off at the same time, and what was a lovely leafy canopy turns into a desert, what seems like, within the space of a couple of months or years. What are the processes then that people can go through if they want that sort of canopy effect and yet don't want to have that die-off effect down the road? Cynthia?
Well, a general rule of thumb is that we try to recommend people, cities not choose more than 10%, not plant more than 10% of any one species. So in the overall canopy, not to plant more than 10% of, say, maple. That way, it's a better way to have more of a diversification and it's better resistant to insects, disease, and so forth.
Anthony Marek, over the sides of the country I can just imagine that the kinds of trees that would get planted in the Willamette Valley of Oregon might be very different from tree species that would get planted in southern Georgia, for example.
Yeah, yes, most definitely. What we are seeing is effects of climate change, and so we're seeing that species that could only have been planted in Florida a couple of decades ago now are planted in the Carolinas, for example. And so there are tools at arborday.org, for example, to show you what would be best in your climate zone, what trees would thrive best in being planted in your community. You had mentioned the heat, and one of the great benefits of trees is we all look for a shady tree, the shade provided by a tree on a hot day, and trees go a long way to mitigate the heat island effect. There have been several studies in urban areas that show average daily temperature in an urban core, and that's directly correlated to the tree canopy in that zip code or on that specific block. We've all gone for walks in our neighborhoods, and there's certain blocks that we like to walk on. Next time you walk that block, I would be willing to wager that it's a tree-lined block, and on a hot summer day, you're avoiding the direct sun exposure. There's also the absorption of carbon dioxide, which is very important. So trees are a positive thing. It's fairly easy to plant a tree, and trees will last for generations. So the nation's children and grandchildren will enjoy these trees that we plant. And trees help to mitigate a lot of the challenges that we face in terms of climate change, heat island effect, carbon dioxide emissions from vehicular traffic, et cetera.
We've got much more to talk about trees with our guests, Anthony Merrick from the Arbor Day Foundation and Cynthia Orlando from the Oregon Department of Forestry. Welcome back and talk more with them and take your phone calls as well. And here's yet another reminder. It is Spring Fund Drive 2014 on Jefferson Public Radio on all the services. We're shooting for a grand total of $200,000. We're getting close, tantalizingly close to a 10% mark. It is an 8-day drive culminating next Tuesday. We are just over $19,000 right now and need a whole bunch more calls to get us closer to $20,000 and over, and obviously better on the way to the $200,000. Please give us a call with your pledge of support, 888-552-6191 or ijpr.org. Back on the exchange in 1 minute. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio's News and Information Service. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our topic today, trees. It is Arbor Week in Oregon. California also observes Arbor Week, but about a month earlier. We're talking about events on Arbor Day and Arbor Week, and about trees more generally with Anthony Merrick at the Arbor Day Foundation, where he's the Director of Communications. Cynthia Orlando is with the Oregon Department of Forestry in the Urban Forestry Department. We have had lots of questions and lots of answers so far about types of trees and methods and things to do with getting trees around your neighborhood. Join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760. That is our toll-free number anywhere in the listening area. Or you can just send us an email to jx@jeffnet.org. Anthony, we're just talking about the general benefits of trees, but also about changes in ranges for where certain types of trees grow as the climate changes. I know we've talked to people who are bird watchers. They've talked about the fact that some species that you used to see only in southern states are staying as far north as Kentucky through the wintertime now. Is the tree range change as pronounced as what we're seeing with birds?
I'm not an expert on the bird ranges, but I do know that, yes, that, as I mentioned earlier, some of the, for example, southern magnolia that were thriving in, say, Georgia and South Carolina can now be planted in the Washington, D.C. area. And that's over a lifetime. That's over a generation. So we're not talking, 400 years ago. We're talking a lifetime. We're seeing, for example, as you alluded to on one of the breaks, that there is a drought that's well publicized and well known, especially by your listeners. And so trees are becoming more and more stressed. So if trees were used to a certain amount of water, they're not getting that. You also have one of the more startling things, I think, is that in Joshua Tree National Forest, the rangers there are saying that within a couple decades, there won't be any more Joshua trees, because if the temperature is increasing 4, 5, 6 degrees a decade, that tree was thriving at an elevation it can no longer thrive at. So it has to move upland. Well, eventually you get to the top of the highest point, and there's no more upland to go. So it is a challenge. As I mentioned earlier, there are a lot of challenges that we modern humans face, and thank goodness we can do something positive like plant a tree. Otherwise, I know, speaking for myself personally, one could go a little bit mad looking at the challenges that we face, but realizing, hey, if we plant more trees, it's going to definitely help mitigate the effects of climate change.
The issue then that raises for people in different parts of the country then, Cynthia Orlando, is does that change the list of trees that might work? In other words, for example, are you beginning to look at more drought-tolerant species throughout Oregon?
Somewhat, and that might be a topic that my coworker Kristen probably has a little more information on than I do. You were talking earlier about tree benefits, and I was hoping maybe you would have a little bit of time before we're through today to talk a little bit more about the benefits of tree planting in general.
Go ahead, please.
One thing that's very interesting that's happening right now, there are several different disciplines of research that are all coming to the same conclusions in terms of trees and human health. There's a really pretty vital connection taking place. They're finding a role between having a healthy urban canopy and people being healthy. There's a researcher with the U.S. Center for Disease Control. He's a doctor, and he speaks frequently Dr. Arthur Wendell about the connection between having a healthy urban canopy and people being physically active, because we do have a problem in the country with obesity. And so he's spoken on that topic. There's a researcher with the University of Washington, Kathleen Wolf, and she's done a lot of research showing there are some very important connections, both social and psychological, with adults and children in terms of having a healthy urban canopy. So there's some pretty powerful connections that are being shown in various disciplines that's quite interesting.
It is interesting. And Anthony America, I imagine you got some information on that too, I'm thinking.
Yeah, so I would echo the point Cynthia is making. There are a lot of peer-reviewed studies. There's one, in fact, January of 2013, so a little more than a year ago, the relationship between trees and human health. And that showed trees trees reduce stress. And so you see a lot of positive health impacts when stress is reduced. You also see the air is cleaner to breathe because trees absorb pollutants. So you see better cardiovascular health. You see better pulmonary health. There's some other fascinating studies, longitudinal studies of women have better labor and delivery outcomes if they're around trees and see trees. The babies have a higher birth rate, and they've isolated socioeconomic status, et cetera. So it's a cause and effect related to trees. So it's fascinating when you think about when someone says, well, you know, I'm feeling a bit off kilter today, and well, I need to be grounded. Well, grounded means grounded. It means your bare feet in the earth. Why do we crave the beach? Why do we want to go to the ocean? Why do we want to go out into nature? And I think that's all the connection to trees and the positive benefits that they have on us.
Is there still any sort of a struggle, Anthony Marek, to convince people of the value of trees, though? Because most of us are old enough to remember, well, those of us who are old enough to remember, let's put it that way, times when it seemed like the only approach to construction was clear all the trees off the land and then start building something new and then plant new trees. You know, the old joke about, you know, every subdivision is named for the natural feature it got rid of. Have we turned a corner? Are we much more responsible and responsive now to trees and having them on the landscape?
I think like anything else, we start with the youngest among us. We have a program, Nature Explore, that is in classrooms across the United States it's getting children in nature, bringing nature to the children in their classrooms. So instead of having an asphalt parking lot, they have more of a natural setting, and they can touch and feel and work with.
Yep, Anthony there? Well, maybe not. Cynthia, are you there? We have lost the entire line. Oh, you are there. Okay. So, Cynthia, you sound like you wanted to get in there anyway and talk about us turning the corner on the approaches to trees and having them on the landscape.
Yes. Well, I was just going to say also that I think, to answer your earlier question, I think that developers, for example, and some folks perhaps in real estate and so forth, are starting to understand a little bit more how it actually benefits them to set aside and retain the trees that are on the site rather than taking everything down and starting over, because those trees have value and a shade tree is worth money. So I think that we are turning the corner a little bit in that respect. And then with regards to trees and human health, there is a big movement nationwide, sort of kicked off by Richard Louv and his No Child Left Inside campaign. And people, families are starting to recognize it's really important to get your children outside in nature, not to let them sit in front of the television set or inside a movie theater during the summer. Get them outside, engaging in nature. It improves test scores, social skills, a lot of benefits, reduces attention deficit and so forth. So I think those things are starting to become a lot more in the mindset of the public.
We haven't even talked about the Arbor Week events around the state of Oregon. Are there any big ones that people need to be aware of, Cynthia?
There's a few taking place. Our city of Salem, I think, is our oldest tree city. We have some growth awards. I don't think I have those handy with me right at the moment. But we have a variety of events taking place around the state. And generally, we used to, all of us used to go out to all of the cities for their Arbor Week events, but we've had such a budget crunch, we only now are able to attend the, if a city has a 10th or 20th, you know, milestone kind of event, we attend those. But you can bet that all over the state we have tree plantings, we have poster contests, we have nature hikes, folks getting out there trying to identify perhaps a new tree to nominate for a heritage tree. So we have a lot of different activities taking place all over.
You know, we had talked about planting earlier and the fact that spring is a good time to plant trees, just not too deeply. Didn't talk much about pruning thus far. Is the pruning season pretty much over in Oregon, Cynthia?
You can still do a little bit of pruning. I did a little bit of pruning myself last weekend. I have an oak and a birch tree that I did some pruning on. The main thing is just not to over prune and try to get online and learn about pruning techniques. Or if you're unsure, have a really large pruning project, if you still have trees that are exhibiting the results of our very harsh icy storm that came through the state, it's best to call a certified arborist and have that person come out and do your tree work for you.
But should the pruning not be done after a tree has budded or gone into bloom or something like that?
Yes, no. We should generally don't prune your tree after it's budded out. I like to just, as a rule of thumb, try to prune mine January, February, you know, if it's not horrible weather out. Or the fall sometimes is a good time as well.
All right, we've learned a lot today. I want to thank you both for joining us. I don't know if Anthony got back on the line or not, but this comes to the end of this part of the broadcast. Okay. Sorry about that.
I'm not sure
what happened.
Thank you so much.
All right. Cynthia Orlando is with the Oregon Department of Forestry. Anthony Merrick, the Director of Communications at the Arbor Day Foundation. Anthony, since you were off for a bit, I'll give you a chance to make a final pitch if you want.
Go ahead, Anthony.
I would simply say plant trees and do that wisely. Maintain your trees. The money you spend up front is going to pay dividends in the future. So everybody enjoy your Arbor Day and plant trees.
All right. Thanks to both of you again. Go ahead.
I was going to mention people might want to know that in Oregon we have a group called the Oregon Community Trees. It's a nonprofit group who promote healthy urban and community forests. And you might like to go online and look up their website. It's OregonCommunityTrees.org.
Okay, we will put that on our Facebook page before the day is out. Thank you so much again, Cynthia Orlando and Anthony Merrick, and a pleasure to talk to both of you about Arbor Week, which is this week in the state of Oregon.